Hi, everybody. I'm Harold, and I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date's October 27, 1991. My home group is the Rebellion Dogs Group in Choctaw, Oklahoma. It's out of the literature. Step 7 in the 12 and 12. I believe in our literature. 91, when I sobered up, I walked into a group that was very service-oriented. And the reason a gentleman stopped me out in the hall, and he thanked me for reflecting old school ethics by wearing this suit. And back then, there were so many people around that that just had it, had that respect, had that demeanor, that deportment, and that care and concern for Alcoholics Anonymous. And the topic is 12 traditions, 12 points to assure our future. And I'm so grateful that. You know, it's only 23 years ago, I got to sit with guys that hung out with Bill, that hung out and met Bob. You know, the influences on me are not that far from our roots, you know, and they watched over us. They kept a good eye on us. I had the privilege of at the general service. Oh, by the way, I want to thank Eva and I want to blame Yvette. I had the privilege at the General Service Conference to be there when Ward, our last chairman of the board, said his farewell. And he described our fellowship, and he made a description about our fellowship. And his description was a big hillside. And on the hillside, some people come out and they set up a little picnic. And the next thing you know, there's another group and another group and another group and another group. And at that very first picnic, a guy gets up and starts dancing. And he dances, and he dances. The next thing you know, everybody at his blanket, or they're all up dancing. And a little bit later, somebody at the next blanket, they jump up and start dancing. Next thing you know, the whole hillside is covered. And he said, that, my friends, is a movement. And in the literature, Bill describes us as a movement. We're filled and rife with new people every day. And the old-timers are there to watch over, and the middle-timers are there to keep us steady. So, when you got sober, when you got here, can you remember the moment or the time when identification happened? When you knew you had some hope? When you knew that you've grabbed hold of something that's going to change? That's what our traditions are about. Protecting that. We want the newcomers to come in to have that chance. And things have changed in 23 years, and it's believe it or not, it's technology. Technology has advanced so much, so fast, and we're in a business world, and we've got competition with us now that used to be our friends. I mean, all you have to do is look at some of the TV commercials. Listen to some of the stuff on our media, and you realize that our friendships have become our competitors. And Bill described in his 12 points to assure our future, he talked about AA should never become big business. We don't need to compete. AA should remain humble, because that's what was it? Humility before success. Unity before fame. Those are the things Bill described. He said that we should never take the traditions and use them as rule and law. We should never line item these things, but we should abide well within the spirit. And that's what I believe our traditions are about, is the spirit. It's a combined body, because we can't use one tradition to countermand the other. You know, every group's autonomous. Oh, my gosh, that lets us run wild. But we have a singleness of purpose, and we have a primary purpose. Oh. So now we're in the professional world, and we have wonderful members, and they're coming in, and they're high end. Bottoms are a little taller, or a little higher now, and they come in. They're from the business world, or from the professional worlds, and they got better ideas. Oh. We have, I didn't hit the timer, so somebody tell me. And if I mess this up, I'm sure glad they're over there to clean it up. The changes are so rapid and so fast, but if we abide by these traditions, we need our elders. We need somebody to sit in our meetings and just call us on the carpet, you know, and slow this process down. One of the things I've discovered, and I'm not a Facebooker because I just don't do social network. I'm an antisocial guy. Why am I going to get on a computer? But one thing I have determined and figured out, 1,000 likes on Facebook does not constitute a majority. In a voting situation, I got a bunch of yes men patting me on the back, and I think that's the only way to go. Bill embraced the autonomy of the groups. And today, I mean, the groups are just all, it's so fun to go to. I traveled all across Oklahoma, and I've traveled coast to coast pretty much and been to meetings. I've not been to two that are alike. I've not been to any I didn't like. I've been to a few I won't go back to, but I've not been to any I didn't like. We just have these guidelines that Bill said that they are sharply defined in our traditions, but they're awfully flexible. Sharply defined means that we know exactly what we're talking about. And it's my experience is that those groups back then interacted and maintained this thing at a pace that society doesn't want us to live by now. I think any decisions we make, we should always, they taught me that we don't look at the traditions and compare them. We hold the traditions like a screen and see if it filters through. If it makes it through the traditions, we're all for it. But if it's questionable, why do we do it? And if I'm looking for a tradition to justify my actions, I'm going down the wrong road already. Because they all apply. They absolutely all apply. The gifts of our traditions are that they're based in sacrifice. And whether we believe it or not, they're asking us not to do a lot. Or they're recommending that we don't do a lot of things. That we don't, you know, reveal or break our anonymity at press, radio, film, and any other media. Internet is implicit. That means it's part of that ball of wax. That we don't tag ourselves into affiliation. Most recently in my area, we had a thing come up about maybe moving our state office into a building, but the building wasn't going to be bought unless AA signed the contract. And the foundation had named themselves, and how would that look that we were affiliated? And the fellowship thought it was a great idea until we explained to them that there is affiliation involved and that there are certain implications, implied affiliation. We have to watch that. You know, went to a treatment center the other day, and they are known for 12-step treatment teaching. You know, they endorse AA. But they're not AA. We have to watch what we say and how we act and what we do. I think the biggest sacrifice we have to give today in this modern age, with high speed everything, with the onslaught of the media and the onslaught of other entities wanting us, I think the greatest sacrifice we have to give up today is time. Take the time to really think about these things that we want to do. You know, are we trying to wrap our traditions around something so well? We can do anything we want, and we can look at it in terms of getting enough yes men that I can wrap the traditions right around it. But am I stretching them to the bursting point? So we need to take the time to openly look at the issues in our groups. Look at what's going on, because little things affect a lot of things. When one of my observations is that groups are wanting to make their own web page now, which is really cool. You look up, I'm just going to use my hometown, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and you see the Rebellion Dogs group. You look up Alcoholics Anonymous, Tulsa, Oklahoma, you see the Rebellion Dogs group, so they go to that web page. what are we putting on our webpage? Will you come to our group because, quote unquote, it's the best in the world? What I'm saying is yours is second, never make it to, up to second best. That's about it. But what am I doing to the groups in that town? If I put a website up, if our group puts a website up, am I affecting the other groups by distracting members from it, or potential members, the opportunity to find AA the way we did? I had a choice of the meetings I got to go to. Well, really, I didn't. They threw me on a hump in the back of a car and drug me to my first meeting. I had a choice at about my third meeting when they knew I would go. So we should take the time. Take the time. And I could quote the traditions up one side, down the other, I promise you. I'm a past delegate. That don't mean anything. I'm a drunk. But we should hold these traditions up like a filter and slow the process down, because the autonomy of the groups allows them to do anything they want. And as a service body and as an entity of old-timers and people that respect Alcoholics Anonymous, we should always, always let the groups do what they want, because we become their anchor. We become their solid piece of AA that they can always fall back to when things go nuts. And things do go nuts. Groups struggle. Groups flourish. They do good. One of the, like I said, we just got to watch even our activities on the web. I think the web and the internet and the information is fantastic, and I think it's a wonderful communication tool. I'm not so sure it's an inlet for recovery. Recovery happens when one alcoholic sits down with another and talks recovery. But I got three guys that I'm sponsoring right now, and they're sending me three things a day they're grateful for on my phone. It'd like to kill me to not make them write it on paper. So I'm getting there. But am I getting close?
You got like 7 more minutes.
7 more minutes. Oh boy. You guys better be taking notes to clean it up. I don't know. Like I said, I've switched from quoting traditions. You're breaking traditions. As a DCM, for a joke, I had this special police badge and every now and then flash on it. Go in and straighten them out. And I don't think I've taken right and wrong out of my thought process with our traditions. And what I put in place is what works and what doesn't work. What's working for Alcoholics Anonymous is we stay out of all the other things, because if we apply these traditions and we sacrifice the idea of tagging into other entities, of becoming big business, of power, property, and prestige, if we avoid those things, what it really does is streamline the process of unity. Unity is our absolute answer. And if we can streamline that process and keep the outside distractions away and remember what we're protecting that magic moment when the still suffering alcoholic becomes the alcoholic with hope and recovery in his path. That's the moment. There's not much else to add to that, because once they step over that line, they're one of us. And it's our charge to show them how we respect Alcoholics Anonymous and how we protect Alcoholics Anonymous. Those guys spent a lot of time in my early years showing me. I had the great idea. I want to start a radio show, because the very first time I got asked to talk, a lady came up to me after that and said, "Oh, Casey, you have a wonderful voice. Have you ever thought about radio?" So, yeah, 2 months later, I got the bright idea. I go to my sponsor. I say, "Hey, man, I've learned all this stuff. Why can't we do a radio show?" And he whacked me in the head with a 12 and 12. And about 3 months later, I became alternate GSR. And then he told me, he said, "Just go get the good stuff and bring it back." And that's I've been doing that ever since. And I was taught that you make a commitment, you stand in a commitment, you only wear one hat at a time, and you don't deviate, and you don't back up, and you never let up. And I believe that it's our job. It's our job to show the newcomers, to lead by example, to honor the group conscience. If the group's going a direction that you don't agree with, try it for a little bit. Bring yourself to it. As far as singleness of purpose, that's a real ball of wax. My take on singleness of purpose, and then I'll let you guys off the hook. My take on singleness of purpose is we've got a past trustee at large in our area, and I went to his meeting on a birthday night. And guys get up, and they're getting desire chips, and they're introducing themselves as addicts. Oh, Dean, good gosh, man, you are the Mecca of God of AA in Oklahoma, and this is your home group, and you're letting addicts get desire chips. And I went up to you, Dean. I said, Dean, what's that about? He said, what's wrong with it? I said, I don't know. He said, wait a minute. It's their job to identify with us. When I share in my meeting, I share recovery. Recovery from the disease of alcoholism. I quote my big book. I talk about sponsorship. I talk about prayers, and I talk about steps. That's singleness of purpose. He said, that cat that's an addict, you come back in 6 months. He'll either be an alcoholic addict, or he'll be a full-blown alcoholic, or he'll be gone. He'll either identify himself in, or he'll identify himself out. It's not my job to police them before they get there. It's my job to keep them if they want to stay. So that's my take on our traditions, and that's my talk. I sure appreciate the time you've given me.
Thank you, Harold. That was wonderful. A lot of words of wisdom there, and it was really great to hear your stories and your experience. Next up, we have Joanne from California.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Joanne. And my sobriety date is June 12, 2002. My home group is the Lunch Bunch group that meets at 12 o'clock in Petaluma on Tuesday. So if you're ever in Petaluma, please come by and see us, just not all at one time, okay? My sponsor's name is Joyce, and when I share, I always start with those three things because they're... I'm going to stay away from you. I believe all three of those things are very vital to my sobriety today. Boy, you know, when I was thinking about this topic, I was thinking there are so many other people that know so much about the traditions. There's so much wonderful writing in our literature about the traditions. I'm going, what do I have to share? And I have to tell you, this is what's come to me at this point in my sobriety, is the fact that for me, the traditions are how I care for Alcoholics Anonymous. It's very important for me to give back to Alcoholics Anonymous what was given to me, but the reason is this isn't my first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober at the age of 27 back in 1979, and I had 17 years of sobriety, and then I relapsed. And that relapse lasted 5 years, and I almost died from the disease of alcoholism. And when I came back, because I did come back, what I realized was by the time, you know, before the relapse starts, you start slipping away. And it's a very subtle departure. What happened to me is I'm the type of alcoholic, when I drink, that's all I can do. I didn't do much with my life prior to getting Alcoholics Anonymous. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to start living a life. You know, I was able to do those things that I saw other people do and always wanted to do, like go back to school, to get a job, to get married, to be a part of society. And that's what happened to me. And there's a saying I didn't hear till I got back, and I wish I had heard it before. And it says, don't let the life that AA has given you get in the way of your AA life. And that's what had happened to me, and I believe it does happen to a lot of us. And when I came back, I got involved. I got involved in a home group, and I got myself a sponsor again. And right around the time that I had a year of sobriety and I was the secretary of my group, and that was about ready to, rotate out of that, somebody said, would you like to be an alternate GSR? And I thought, sure, why not? What's that? And somebody took me to a district meeting. And at this district meeting, they read this part in our service manual about why we need a general service conference. And if any of you have not read it, I really implore you to get a service manual and read it. It's on page S32. And in it, it talks about that we don't need a conference for us today because we have our meetings. We have sobriety. We have everything we need. What we need a general service conference for is to ensure that the doors of AA are going to be open. And I can't quote this verbatim, but it talks about the baby being born today destined for alcoholism, the drunk that is stumbling in the dark just a few blocks from this meeting. You know, we need it for the future. And all of a sudden, I don't know, I had one of many spiritual experiences in a district meeting. I'm sitting there going, oh my God. I had been away from Alcoholics Anonymous for at least a decade, 10 years, from the time I stopped going to the meetings to the time I sobered up again, 10 years. And when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, you were still here. You still had the same meetings. There were the same meetings I used to go to before. There were the same people still here. The steps were the same. The book was the same. And you know why? Because someone had been taking care of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was in that moment I had this realization that it was my turn. It was my turn to take care of Alcoholics Anonymous for the drunk like me that gets confused in long-term sobriety, that loses their way, and they want to find their way back. Because there's a lot of us out there. You know, we don't realize until we realize how precious sobriety is, how precious this life that the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 concepts give us. And I'm at the point where I know I love the 12 traditions, but I believe that we are at a point in Alcoholics Anonymous where we cannot talk about just one side of the triangle anymore. We have to talk about all three sides of the triangle, and we have to talk about the spiritual connection between the steps, the traditions, and the concepts. And I know there was an agenda item last year that didn't pass, and I have a dream that someday we will have literature that explains the spiritual connection between all three of those legacies. Because I don't know about you, but by the time I worked my 12 steps and I wanted to give this away, where do I take them? To my home group. And that's when the traditions became a vital part of my sobriety, because this home group became precious to me. I call my home group my anchor. Because in my first sobriety, I did move quite a few times in sobriety. And every time I would move, I would get a new home group and a new sponsor, except for the last time. The last time I didn't get a home group and a sponsor. And what happened to me was I drifted. and I drifted away from the program. So I'm hoping that someday that there will be, and it would kill two birds with one stone. I know one of the things is our complaints about our literature is some of it is antiquated. Why can't we have a new piece of literature in today's language explaining these steps in today's terms, in today's language? Because there is a direct spiritual connection to all three of the legacies. And I always love the part about the stool. You know, they talk about it being a three-legged stool. If you lose one of those, you'll fall down. And what I've realized for me is if I don't keep Alcoholics Anonymous, if I don't care for Alcoholics Anonymous today, that is my life. I am not one of those alcoholics that can survive out there on my own thinking. It didn't work. And I think I need to check time because I can get lost in my own thinking also. One of the things I've noticed, too, is that the traditions do seem to work, even though some of us see these examples all around that may say that the traditions aren't working or people aren't working the traditions. I don't like the idea of the AA police. I don't believe that's what it is. I believe there are lots of opportunities for courageous conversations about the traditions, and I really believe that this is a time for all of us to start having courageous conversation. I remember the first time I did it, I had just been a DCM and I was all on fire about the traditions, and I went to this one group and they were paying the babysitter for this women's meeting out of the Seven Traditions basket. And I attended, and my sponsor was egging me on with this. I remember that distinctly. We were at the business meeting, and she said, you know, you got to say something, you got to say something. So I raised my hand, you know, and I think I used the words, I think this is in violation of the traditions. And I believe I quoted Tradition 6. And I thought I was going to be, I really thought I was going to be tomatoed to death that night. But what was funny was what popped out of my mouth right after that. I asked, would the group be open to having a group inventory? And the group said, yes. And I said, would you be okay if I got a facilitator for this inventory? And they said, yes. So I got a past delegate that I knew that was a very quiet, peaceful person to come in. I did all my homework on you know, what I wanted to say. I called New York. I got all these ideas about how to handle this, you know. I was really prepared for this inventory. And when it came my turn in the inventory, I said my piece. I had not only the problem, but I had a solution for them. I made a suggestion that perhaps we could have a separate can, you know. And I made some other suggestions that night. And wouldn't you know, right after this inventory was done, the chair position for the steering committee for that meeting was open, and my sponsor was going. And I became the chair of the steering committee, and there was a little bit of a ulterior motive to that, because I made sure we talked about everything at that inventory. And for the next year, we took an item every month for 12 months, and at the end of that year, what happened for me was some of my ideas, the group voted in. They thought they were great ideas. Some of them, they did not. But what happened for me was the self-respect that I got out of having my voice, raising my voice and letting it be, not raising my voice, but speaking my truth at that meeting. I was scared to death. And a lot of people don't realize this about me, because that this is not the most comfortable position in the world for me. I am basically a really shy person. If I didn't have to talk to you, I probably wouldn't. I'm very happy being spiritual at a monastery or something. But I find that Alcoholics Anonymous keeps putting me in these positions where what I have to do is learn to communicate with you. And this is what the traditions have taught me to do, to communicate what is going on in my heart. And this was one of the things that I got to experience as a general service representative. The first time I took a group conscience and I put something out on the floor and I explained it. And we went around the room and everybody in my home group talked. And then I asked if they would like to go around the room again. And as we went around the room, I don't know if you've ever had this when you've taken a group conscience, and somebody, that lone voice, that courageous lone voice, will say something. And all of a sudden you feel your heart, your spirit shift, and how you saw something changed. And what I got to see was, as it went around the room the second time, the group conscience emerged. And I was so in awe of that process that I have been in general service now for 12 years. Because it still to this day just gets me that when we speak together, when we come together and we talk about these things, the voice of a higher power does come up. You know, and I believe that is truly our second tradition, is what guides our fellowship in the form of our steering committees at our meetings. It guides our fellowships at our district meetings, at our area assemblies. It guides our fellowship at the conference. You know, and it is such a process that I don't think I will ever tire of watching it. So I only wrote down three little points, so I didn't go on and on and on and on and on. Because I forgot to, I just noticed, I forgot to thank Eva. And I found out I can blame Patty. Patty is our past delegate, and I know this is, I have to tell you the story about when I got the email about they were going to ask me to speak. And I wrote them right back saying, I think you have the wrong Joanne L. There is another Joanne L. She's a past trustee in Canada. I think that's the one you want. And then I thought, an email's not going to be enough. I better call. So I call the next morning. I get a hold of Eva, and I explain what I just explained to you. She starts laughing, says, no, Joanne, you're the right one. You know, and I'm grateful for the lineage of people that have come before me, the people that taught me how to be a GSR, people that taught me how to be a district committee member, people that taught me how to be a treasurer, you know, how to talk about money, talk about a courageous conversation. You know, I was at the self-support workshop this morning, and the hardest thing for me was when I became a treasurer and I had to explain to our group, you know, there's five of us here and it costs $12 for the meeting hall. That means a buck isn't enough if we want to stay here. And out of that conversation of telling them what our finances were, how important that is to know what your finances are, out of that conversation came, we want to keep the meeting. I guess we better give at least two. But guess we better count and see how many people are in the room so that we can put enough in the basket. And will you let us know if we don't have enough? And that group wanted to be fully self-supporting through their own contributions. That was their goal. And within a year, that group not only was supporting the meeting, buying their own literature, buying their own coffee, but they were making contributions to all of the entities because they wanted to be self-supporting through their own contributions. And that all started with a conversation about how much does it cost to be a meeting, you know? So the future of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think, rests solely in how well we take care of it today. You know, how well all of us in this room practice the traditions, the steps, the concepts, how well we apply all of these spiritual principles to our lives. And I have a lot of hope, and I have a lot of faith, and I have a lot of gratitude that Alcoholics Anonymous is in really good hands. But the most important part is that we need to talk with one another. We need to have more conversations about the traditions. We need to have more conversations about the concepts. We need to explain to everyone, especially the new person coming in, why Alcoholics Anonymous is here 80 years later so that you can have a chance at a better way of living. You know, I'm so grateful for everyone that has come before me and taken care of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope that I get to take care of it for the next person coming down the pike. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. That was terrific. I was at a meeting yesterday, and I heard that yesterday was the 80th anniversary of the day that Bill and Bob gave the message to Bill Dobson in the bed, the third man. So yesterday was where our message went. 80 years ago yesterday, our message went from Bill and Bob to our third member. And I think it was pretty awesome. When I got the invitation to be of service here and chair this meeting today, I immediately looked to see what the topic was, and it was the 12 traditions. And I thought, whew, no one will be there. It'll be a small meeting room with about six or seven people, and I won't have to worry. And I was mistaken. It's terrific to see all of you people here. A meeting on the traditions. Wow. Give yourselves a big hand. It really is wonderful. You know, these little 12 traditions that do assure our future. I happen to also be a past delegate, and I had just a wonderful experience at the General Service Conference for a couple of years, and just filled with, overwhelmed with joy and love for all of you and for this fellowship. It's the most important thing in my life. And I can say that with my wife sitting in this room. It really is. I would be dead without this fellowship. No doubt about it. I have a home group, and sometimes my home group doesn't do things the way I would have them do them. And, you know, as a past delegate, we've been known to be accused occasionally of being bleeding deacons. And so it's a very spiritual act of mine when I don't correct people making mistakes. And I have to work hard at that sometimes. But, you know, I think the way that we learn is to make mistakes and to learn from them. And these traditions are guidelines. They're not the law. There's no law here. It's a bunch of spiritual principles that we try to mold our ideals to. We have I'll give you a quick example of me wanting to bite my tongue and not being able to. This one gentleman in our group got up and said, I think that we should give a big book to everybody who walks into this group. All in favor. And, you know, literally 95% of the people raised their hands. And then he said, all opposed. And I raised my hand. And he said, well, that's it. Forget about it. It's done. You know, closed case. And I didn't say anything. And then after the meeting, he came up to me and said, you know, I really shouldn't have railroaded that through. I should have let you speak. What were you going to say? And I said, well, you know, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't get a free big book. I may be the only person who didn't get a free big book, but I bought my big book. And I still have that first big book. And it's so dear to me. And it's got all of my notes in it. And I own my AA. You know, it's a part of me. It wasn't given to me. I paid for it. And back then, it was a big deal for me to pay for that book. But it means a lot to me. And I said, you know, there are those of us who cannot afford a big book, and by all means, we should tap our treasury and give that person a book. Maybe they'll be able to repay it at some point. But for those of us who can afford it, this isn't a charity. You know, AA is not a charity. It's a fellowship of alcoholics who try to help one another stay sober a day at a time. And he heard me, and he actually apologized to the group after that at our next meeting. And for that guy to do that, that was a big deal for him, too. So I have to remember that I don't know all the answers. I never will know all the answers. And oftentimes that minority opinion gives me reason for pause and lets me think, gee, you know what? That guy's brave, or gal is brave, to get up and say that. And gosh, you know what? They're right. And one of the wonderful things about Alcoholics Anonymous is it does allow and, in fact, encourages the minority opinion. And for that, I'm really grateful. And enough out of me. We are ready to hear from Dutch from Florida. Welcome, Dutch.
Wow. Yeah, right back at you. I'm Dutch. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Royal Palm Group of Vero Beach, Florida. The best Royal Palm Group in Vero. And my sobriety date is July 25th, 1985. Oh. One day at a time, that's all. That's it. You're one day at a time. Okay, what I'd like to talk about, these guys did a fantastic job of telling you what the traditions are, what they do for us, and why we have to have them. I'd like to, with your permission, go back in history a little bit. What caused Bill to have to write these things? You know, what happened back then, way back in the 30s and the 40s? And how did it get written? Did he do it all by himself? Where did the wording come from? And I think it's interesting. I'm a history buff. You know, it started basically, I got notes. I'm not that smart. It started basically back in 1937, and the story is in the 12 and 12. You know, the gentleman that came to the Akron group with another addiction. And I hear so many different things about what an addiction was. What it was a sexual deviant. That's what it was. But we're not supposed to say that. However, I like accuracy in my history. You know, and Dr. Bob, we all know, he said, you know, when it came to him, they said, he said to them, what would the master do? And Bill asked Stuart in the writing, indeed, what would the master do? The unfortunate thing is that in that case, when usually the step meeting where they read a paragraph or two and then they start discussing it, very seldom do they ever get to the next paragraph. It says that the man never again bothered anyone with his other affliction and that he helped thousands of alcoholics, which is probably the most important part of the entire story, but that gets lost. And probably even for my money, it wasn't used, and I understand why not. It was a story that happened in 1945. It was a gentleman that came, a bunch of guys went to Bill W. in New York, and says, Bill, we got a problem. We've got this guy. He's a felon. He's a drug addict. He's black. Says, what are we going to do with him? And Bill looked at him and says, well, is he an alcoholic? And they said, yes. He says, well, what more can we ask? To me, that's a quintessential explanation or example of who can be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Are you an alcoholic? Because I don't believe that any alcoholic comes here without any baggage. I haven't met one yet. I did not come in because of alcohol. I came in because of a very good reason. I didn't want to go to jail. And my lawyer said, it might be a good idea you go to AA. So I did. Didn't want to, but I did. And all these years later, here I am, very happy. So, you know, all these little things were happening. In 1941, when the Jack Alexander article came out, there was a tremendous influx of membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. Groups sprang up, no organization to speak of. I know in Florida, I suppose it's all over the country, we have this tradition play with a newcomer and all that. You know, the newcomer walks into a group and he says, I want to join. I says, okay. And they have this application form, only simple one-page form. There's one question on there, are you Protestant, Catholic? He's a Catholic. He says, oh, wait a minute, and they come out with a 12-page form. And that's pretty much how it went, you know, all the different groups, different ideas on how it ought to be, and nobody basically controlling anything. And I'm sure most of us have heard the story about Rule 62. You know, don't take yourself so seriously. They had 61 rules, and they found out it didn't work. So they came up with Rule 62, don't take yourself so seriously. In 1944, Bill got a letter from a gentleman in Virginia. He said, "Bill, if we're going to keep going the way we are, it's going to be a lot of problems. It happened to the Washingtonians." Bill didn't have a clue who the Washingtonians were. Then in 1945, there was an article in the Grapevine from a gentleman from Michigan about the Washingtonians and what happened to them. So he went to the public library, New York Public Library, found out all he could about the Washingtonians, and it scared the dickens out of him because he saw Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever, all the things that were happening in AA. Now, since the Jack Alexander article, he'd been working a little bit, you know, towards the traditions, writing things down and all this and all that. But then he got some help. There was a gentleman from Chicago, Earl T., who suggested that he take these ideas, codify them, like number them, and publish essays on them in the Grapevine. And that's exactly what happened. 1946, the first version of the traditions ended up in the Grapevine. In 1947, in December, the first essay of all each individual tradition ended up in the Grapevine, one each month through November 1948. A little myth. A lot of times people will say, well, the only thing that was changed in the traditions is the word honesty. Or honest, that, you know, have a, the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. Not quite. That's the preamble. 1947, a gentleman named Tony, who was the editor of the Grapevine, wrote the preamble based on the work that Bill had been doing on the traditions along with Earl T. That's where the word honest came in. It took about 8 years. We already had a conference going. It took the conference to get the word honest out of the preamble. The short form of the traditions that came about, that are now hanging on the wall, they weren't written until 1949. So if you look at the short tradition where Bill took the language from the Grapevine originated preamble, the word honest was not in there. So it was never in the tradition itself. It's just a little myth. But that's how the traditions came about. It wasn't just one man. There was a lot of work went into it. There were a lot of problems getting these things accepted. And they weren't sure in the late 40s, even when those art essays went into the Grapevine, that it was going to work. There was so much opposition, and I'm sure you all read, you know, that when Bill was asked to speak somewhere, "Bill, please come and tell your stories, but don't talk about those traditions." They didn't want to hear it. And all these years later, not much has changed. Go to a step meeting with one night of the month is a tradition. One pot less coffee. You know, it's not needed. So nothing has changed. But so to see all these people here today is reminiscent of what we do at the quarterly assemblies in South Florida, Area 15, on Saturday morning. Yeah. At 8 a.m. it's a concepts meeting, a concepts workshop. We have some past delegates and three of them. We do three concepts every quarterly, cover all 12 in 1 year. And the room is not this large, but as large rooms is filled, 8 a.m. Saturday morning. You want hope for the future? It's there staring you in the face. You know, people interested in the concepts. I mean, who cares about the concepts? A lot of us. A lot of people. And the concepts came after the traditions because, in a way, a lot of the thing in the concepts are based on the principles embodied in the traditions. And as already been mentioned, but whenever I talk about the traditions in Florida, I always start off with pretty much the same thing. And I'll read it because I don't want to misquote it. This is out of AA Today from the 1960 San Diego Convention. "We obey our traditions willingly because of the need for AA survival. We obey them because we ought to and because we want to." If you look up the word "ought" in the dictionary, it says out of moral obligation. That's heavy. It is my obligation to do all I can as an individual member of Alcoholics Anonymous to obey the spirit or to work with the spirit of the tradition. You know? Other things I've heard over the years. Another thing that I truly love, and again, this I want to read because I don't want to misquote it. And as soon as I find it, I'll do that. And here it is. Perhaps the worst way of using the traditions, this is from Bill, is in a legalistic manner, especially when someone is accused of violating this or that. The traditions were not designed to produce legalistic conformity. They were designed to produce spiritual unity. And I love that. That is... You know, like it says in the 12th tradition, humility... I get messed up when I read that thing, I tell you what. But I'm told that humility is where it's at. And Bill's written a lot about humility, and we go into the 11th and the 12th tradition. There's so many different variations on the word, on the definition of the word humility, but what's in the illustrated traditions on tradition 12 is humility is not taking credit for your own recovery. It is not taking credit for someone else's recovery. And I know where my recovery came from. It came from a higher power I might choose to call God. I was an Alcoholics Anonymous for, I guess about 5 months. Hated every minute of it. Went to meetings because I had to. In Jersey, that's where I got sober. You don't get chips, you get this 90-day pin, which is precious. Right? Right on, brother. I knew what to say when I went up to get my 90-day pin because for 3 months I'd heard people say it. The biggest lie told by me in the first 3 months in AA, you're going to hear it right now. I owe it all to my higher power, whom I choose to call God, and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And why did I lie? Because for 3 months I've seen people say that, and people would come up to it, they'd shake the hand, slap it on the back, saying, you're doing a wonderful job, glad to have you as a member. They would give you a hug. I wanted that. I didn't want what you had, but I wanted that, you know? As it turned out, I got the other two. Several months went by, and I decided this miracle that they talk about is a sham because nothing is happening. It's now 5 months. What happened? So I go to my home group because I was forced to join a group. I say, if that miracle doesn't happen tonight, I'm out of here. I'm gone. And I knew I didn't want to drive drunk. I had learned that much. So I walked drunk. So as I'm walking out of the church, there's a voice that says, are you Dutch? I says, yeah. Turn around. Somebody I never seen before, a young fellow. And he says, you're my temporary sponsor. I says, what? Now, mind you, I had absolutely done nothing. I'd made coffee. That's about it. And because I was told to. I said, no, you got the wrong guy. He says, no, Bill in the kitchen sent me to you. Bill. I knew that was Bill's job. So ego takes over. Ego is alive and well. Sometimes ego works. I said, okay, call me tomorrow. I give him my phone number. He says, meet me at such and such a meeting. I give him this whole schedule for the whole week. I haven't heard from him yet. And I was mad because now I had a walk home. I couldn't drink. I could for the whole week. I knew I wasn't going to be able to drink because this guy is going to call. Now, Bill worked in New York City, so he was only in town for the weekend. And this is a Friday night meeting. So I can't wait for Friday. I'm going to get... Bill and I are going to have a discussion. So I walk in the kitchen. I'm going to... Excuse my language right now. I'm going to walk into the kitchen. I said, Bill, did you send this kid to me to be his temporary sponsor? He said, why the hell would I send anybody to you? I said, well, I don't know. So he says, no way. And at that point, I had my first spiritual experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. It dawned on me that for 8 days I had not thought of a drink. And that night, that Friday night, early December, my sponsor David and I went to the beach in Seaside Heights, New Jersey. And we knelt down at the shoreline, cold as anything, and we did steps 1, 2, and 3. So I can claim I did step 1, 2, and 3 in 10 minutes, or I can tell you the truth of telling me, you tell you it took me 5 months. But I took him. And he gave me an appointment for 2 weeks hence to do a fifth step. He gave me 2 weeks, which was a disaster. However, it was the first time I ever looked at myself, honestly. And David, when we did a step, we did a tradition. So I got the interest in the traditions and the history. Is my time up?
No.
Oh. Sorry.
6 minutes.
Six more minutes. Let's see what we can do with this now. There's so much on the traditions. I mean, I was talking to somebody yesterday. He says, how in the world are you going to talk about 12 traditions in 20 minutes? And this was a trustee I was talking to. He says, why don't you just talk about what you like? Talk about what you know. He says, and go with that. I says, that sounds good. And like I said, that's why you got stuck with the history, because that's what I like. But the traditions, you know, it's another thing. If you look at the 12 traditions, if you want to come right down to it, it's the 12 biggest mistakes made by AA in its first 10 years of existence. This is the truth. The membership thing. Unity, there was no unity. Every group went every which way. And it is so important in the essays that he wrote, in the first edition alone. It's in the... In the essays, it says, eventually, of course, we cooperate because we really wish to. We see that without substantial unity, there can be no AA, and that without AA, there can be little lasting recovery for anyone. So my life depends on us being unified, us being together. You know, and like I said before, nobody comes in without baggage. And that's one of my things. And I know we have all these people. Oh, here's a treatment center. So I kind of disagree with other things, the insurance companies that are not willing to pay for things. But that's neither here nor there. People, when they come in, generally come in for their baggage. I mean, if I could drink without problems, why would I be here? It's the problems that brought me here, the things that were going to send me to jail. The wife at that time, who's now the ex-wife and the mother of my children, would tell me the world would be a better place if you were dead. Let me tell you what Alcoholics Anonymous did for me, especially through these traditions, because now we're talking about relationships when you talk about a traditions, relationship with others. It was already said, communication. She had 5 years ago, she had breast cancer. Double radical mastectomy. And she got through that. 3 years later, she ended up with acute myeloid leukemia as a result of the treatment she had for the breast cancer. I was able to help her. I was able to be there. Okay, today we are friends. I told her one time, I says, you know, I never really made true amends to you. She says, oh, yes, you did. I says, when? She says, by the way you're living today, by who you are today. That's what I got from living my life using the 12 steps and the traditions to the best of my ability in any relationship. You know, those are the benefits. My two sons, 135, 136, when I first got divorced, would not come stay there with Dad for their weekends. Today I talk to them all the time. We had a wonderful time together on Father's Day last month. Steps and traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. I cannot visualize my life with just the steps, because I don't think it's enough, not for me. I need what the traditions have to offer, how to communicate with other people, how to care for other people, you know, and just the unity part. All these people in here, we all have this one thing in common, alcoholism. The ism. And it's the isms that I need to work on. I do that through the steps and the traditions. to the best of my ability. The humility is the ultimate goal. You know, it's already been in the steps, having received a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Well, once I have that spiritual awakening, the sky is the limit and the traditions are mine for the taking. So it's sad that there's not as much attendance at tradition meetings as there is at step meetings. But I look at this crowd. We really don't have anything to worry about. We're here. And there's a bunch of people I know, and they've got a lot more time than I got. And that's the beauty of it, because they are the ones that are carrying this on. They're allowing me to carry on. They're allowing you to carry on. You know, they're there to watch over us, like it's already been said. And isn't that what it's all about? Thank you.